I am really happy to welcome back Perry Garfinkel, longtime New York Times contributor, author of Buddha or Bust, and working on your next book, Being Gandhi, in which you follow the principles of Mahatma Gandhi, and you've been doing that for the past year. So how is that going?
Well, it's going fairly well. Not as easy as I anticipated. I'm following six principles of Gandhi, which he set out that would help people find peace and nonviolence in their life. So I'm a vegetarian. I'm simplifying my life in a lot of interesting ways. Like I just cleaned out my closet recently again. I've kind of weaned myself from media, social media, and all the negativity. I fall off and on the cushion. There's an old Zen saying, fall off the meditation cushion 9 times, get back on it 10. And then I found a quote from Gandhi the other day who said, glory lies in the attempt to reach one's goal, and not necessarily in reaching it. So I feel this mission I've been on has made my life better. I'm not Gandhi. I'm not being Gandhi, but I'm not either being fake Gandhi, but I am approaching a better me, Perry 2.0.
Have you found that your journey has helped during the pandemic?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Personally, since I write from home and I have an office in my home, but it's made me more sensitive to people, to my own emotions. When you eliminate a lot of the side distractions, you really come down to your core self. And I think a lot of people going through this pandemic have been saying the same thing. You look at what's of value, your family, your health, your interactions with people, coming from the fact that we have to keep a social distance, wear masks, washing our hands. Definitely heightened my sensitivity to being a human. We treasure our friends. We're cautious about getting together. Everybody's going to change. And Gandhi was the one, the famously coined phrase, be the change you want to see in the world. So this pandemic forcing us to go through these changes. Maybe it's kind of like Noah and the Ark.
It's interesting that this has come at this point in your life.
It is. Well, it's why I undertook this journey. I saw some things that I wanted to change in my life. Unfortunately, I was struggling.
We wanted to talk today about meditation, which is a big part of your journey. And you said that you are meditating with a modern twist.
Yes, there are a slew of new meditation apps. What I'm finding is that having your meditation class in your phone makes it that much easier. But people can't go to a meditation class anymore because of this pandemic. And so you can do it on your own. There are pros and cons. When you go to a meditation class with a group of people, you find strength in numbers. The group around you are practicing slow breathing and eyes closed and sitting upright. You can see others doing it. So there's a kind of peer pressure to keep your discipline. Doing it alone, you can say, oh, I forgot to, and you jump up and go clean the oven or something. So it requires a second level of discipline. I also found that there's an irony to using a meditation app on a phone because these screens and these mobile devices are themselves causing a lot of stress in the society. And there's plenty of research. I saw once Americans unlock their phone 100 to 150 times a day. And each time triggers the stress hormone. Either it's good news, it's bad news, it's no news. So the thing that has causing some of our stress is now the thing that can we turn to help alleviate the stress. Once you get over that hurdle, you're fine.
I think that's sort of like reading a newspaper, the solidity of paper in your hands, and now you just do it on your phone, just like everything else.
I was looking at three apps. One is called Calm, which is the most popular one. One is called Headspace, and the third is called Happify. I feel that that one particularly becomes a little too complicated and off point. They try to do too much. Calm is a daily, they call it your daily calm, and it's about 10 minutes. And luckily, and I should interject, I'm a longtime meditator in a very traditional sense, probably for 30 years, and I've done long 10-day retreats. These apps are more for novices and beginners. So the daily meditation is not an hour of silent meditation with a stiff back. It's 10 minutes, and the introduction every day is a woman with a very mellifluous voice. The first 3 minutes are a guided meditation, sitting up straight, let go of the day's stress, and begin to feel you're in the zone of kind of quiet space. And then there's 3 minutes of silence, which is the practice of meditation. And then she says, she guides you to come out of it. And there's a quote at the end and everything from the famous saints of the times. I found something from Emilio Estevez. We're all wonderful, beautiful wrecks. That's what connects us. That's where we're all broken, all beautifully imperfect. And then there's a quote from the Dalai Lama. If it can be solved, there's no need to worry. And if it can't, worry is of no use. Very valuable, the little nuggets of wisdom. So within the context of how to meditate is how to think about the issues that may be causing you stress. And I, for one, know that I worry way too much about things I have no control over. So that's calm. Headspace is a little more advanced, and it also offers a little few more options. And then there's Appify, which is the most complicated. I found that having easier access inclines you more to do it, which is the point. And when I got in the rhythm, it became part of my life. And when I woke up, everyone grabs their phone, and rather than begin scrolling through, my app comes up, you know, welcome to Calm, and I do that. And then I have a perspective on the whole rest of the day.
How do you differentiate meditation from prayer, walking the dog, or something that I do, which is expressive writing? I do expressive writing every day just for about 10 to 15 minutes, and I found that it is very meditative. Do you think it's just like another limb of the tree?
I completely agree that there's a branch of the tree. I swim. And I just go into a zone. I'm an avid walker, and I'm doing more walking now because Gandhi walked. That becomes my practice. But the difference, though, between these things that you do and meditation is meditation, you can say, is a thing that you don't.
Okay.
You're practicing doing nothing. And when you do nothing, then these other things come up. And it's similar. People run. Say, you know, I have great deep thoughts, and that's good. But meditation is a kind of step removed. So if you try to do nothing, of course, the mind thinks of a million other things to do. And as opposed to walking or running or swimming or any kind of exercise, even possibly past your practice of personal writing, there's a hormonal trigger that changes the very nature of your body chemistry. So meditation, the practice is to not think, or when you have thoughts, see them objectively as like over there. Clouds noting, it's called, and you see clouds passing by. A cloud is a thought, and you're not attached to it in the way that, oh, this is me, this is my problem, this is my worry. It's, oh, there's worry. I notice when I'm walking, I'm distracted by what's outside. It's more distracting.
And I'm so interested in getting back to the rest of your Gandhi journey. What is on your agenda now with following Gandhi?
Part of my journey is to go to the places where Gandhi was. Last December and January, I spent 2 months in India. I was at a hotel across the street from Gandhi's original ashram. And in fact, I did a large part of the 240-mile march to the sea, which came to be known as the Salt March, which really triggered the movement of India to quit the British Empire. And then, Pat, I went to South Africa for 2 weeks, where Gandhi was a lawyer for 14 years and had an amazing experience. And so in South Africa, he was defending the rights of Indians to live lives without oppression. And now when I went, even post-apartheid, I felt there was a lot of racism, and I felt that there is a rumbling of racism underneath all this nicey-nice kind of stuff post-apartheid. Now I'm supposed to go to England because Gandhi spent years and become a lawyer, and he also got deeply more involved in vegetarianism from a health perspective because he came from an Orthodox family who were vegetarians anyway. So a little frustrating for me because that part of my book, which is to be there, has been a little compromised, and we're just waiting to see what's going to go on. Interestingly, though, I've gotten into and out of, and I've become so meticulous about observing what I think, how I think, what I do, and following these principles. Gandhi's famous for nonviolence. He's credited with really launching the nonviolent resistance movement. It doesn't have to be punching someone. I stopped watching at the NFL because it was violent body contact. Movies that I used to love, where people are like Gladiator, the Bourne trilogy.
Reservoir Dogs.
What?
Reservoir Dogs. Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness.
All the Quentin Tarantino movies. So as soon as if I'm flipping through the channels and I see a movie with violence, I turn it off. I'm just eliminating things that are inherently violent by nature. Even TV shows, and I never watched it, but what comes to mind is the Jerry Springer kind of violence.
How about Twitter?
Twitter. And even the news, watching either Fox or CNN, they're driven by this dynamic tension of conflict. Somebody screaming at somebody else. Anything that triggers a knot in my stomach is a sign that I'm observing some sort of violent conflict. The responsibility is to you and yourself that spewing this ugly stuff only comes back and it comes on you. So this has changed me. And to be quite honest, and I cry more, Pat. If I'm watching, a moving scene on TV, I feel things more strongly now because I've sifted through what matters and what doesn't to me. With the vegetarianism, I'm a meat and potatoes guy from birth and born in New York, raised in New Jersey. My dad was the quintessential meat and potatoes guy. We always had some sort of meat, chicken or fish at dinner. And I've analyzed why I'm having trouble being a vegetarian. It's almost like an addiction. And there are days when I say to myself, I need some protein because I have to fortify myself. And it's not true. There's plenty of research that shows you can get your protein many different ways. And I've read about weightlifters and, Olympians who are vegans, and it certainly doesn't hurt their competitiveness. But there's another factor, and I've looked at how throughout the day you start thinking about, what will I have for dinner? Oh, I'm in a mood for roast beef or meatloaf.
A steak sandwich.
Or a really nice piece of salmon, translucently broiled. But I've noticed when I've fallen off the vegetarian cushion and indulged in some meaty, fatty meat, the eating of it goes too quickly. The moment of savoring it is only in the beginning and when you see your last bite. In between, you forget you're eating unless you're doing very meditative kind of eating. Next day, I feel terrible. It's not great for your digestive system. I do it a couple of weeks ago. I had this wonderful Vietnamese pork dinner. And the next day I felt like crap.
Yeah. But there's something too. You don't sit down to a bowl of vegetable soup that's been simmering all day and it's good for you and the aroma fills the house. But you sit down to the soup and it's good, but it's not like having a steak on the grill.
Because of
what we've been culturally conditioned to love.
Yes, I agree. And yet there are ways to make that minestrone soup without the beef stock more appealing by surrounding it with other stuff, like best loaf of bread. And if you're not a vegan, really good butter and a salad on the side that's colorful and rich. And after it, you feel full. And it's what happens the next day. You do feel lighter and better. I had a very clean meal. I feel better. And, I was good to myself. I was good to my body. Yeah. So when I started taking pills for my rheumatoid arthritis, my rheumatologist said, we're going to taper you down. I was taking, I had a polymyalgia rheumatica. So I was taking prednisone.
Yeah, I remember.
It's a funky drug. But I realized I'm going to take this approach with all the things I'm doing Gandhian. I can taper down. And in the tapering, you wean yourself from this habit. like a great steak.
This is an amazing concept for a book, but when can we expect Being Gandhi?
Oh, the pressure. Well, the fact is, because of this pandemic, originally the book was going to be done this coming April. Now I have till August. So the book will come out in the spring of 2022, which seems like forever away, but in the world of publishing, it's tomorrow. And I feel like my deadline was yesterday. So the meditation part really has helped my being Gandhi, because with meditation, you become more focused and refined in your thought process. And a lot of my process is inner work. So I hope I'm around, and I hope you're around in the spring of 2022 and to see what I've come up with.
Well, I can't wait. Thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us about all of this.
It's my great pleasure. You're a great interviewer. You always trigger more thoughts than I thought I had, Pat.